Hey folks, today's episode is brought to you by CarParts.com. CarParts.com is the smartest way to shop for auto parts. Their fast, mobile-friendly experience makes it easy to shop for the parts that you need when you need them. Just enter the year, make, and model of your vehicle, start shopping, and start saving. It's that simple.
New parts make you feel so happy. They really, really do, because you don't realize the deficit you were living with until you put new parts on, and then the thing works better. Or you can hold a cup of coffee without spilling hot liquids on your ginger bits. So get new parts. They help you find them. Very easy to use, very good software online. Helps you find all the things you need, and they ship them out really quickly.
Obviously, Zach is into his parts. CarParts.com stocks their own inventory, cutting out the middleman and passing the savings on to you. So whether you've been in a collision, whether you're working on your project car or just need to catch up on maintenance, go to CarParts.com/thesmokingtire for 10% off $100 or more on select brands. Get the right parts right now at CarParts.com. We're also brought to you today by Mint Mobile. If saving more and spending less is one of your top goals for 2022, why are you still paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless? Switching over to Mint Mobile is the easiest way to save this year. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month. You could be saving, like in some cases, like 90% off what other traditional providers are offering. I mean, my cell phone bill is a lot more than $15 a month, I assure you. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts when you switch over. With Mint Mobile, you can choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data that you never use. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, get shipped in a little envelope. It's a card. That's how that works. Go to mintmobile.com/tire. That's mintmobile.com/tire. Cut your wireless bill to just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/tire. And of course, if you ever wonder what those awesome sunglasses are that me and Zach are wearing in every single video with the matte lenses in all different colors, different frame styles, whether it's aviators or wayfarer style, wraparound style, there's a style for every lifestyle, a style for every activity, and a color of lens for every wardrobe. That's DillonOptics.com. Or better, if you want to help us and help yourself, by going to thesmokingtire.com and clicking on that Dylan banner, when you build your sunglasses and order them, we will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt for supporting the people who support our show. The NIR lens technology means you get less glare. It's like looking at like HD life. Like it's pretty, they're sharp, they're clear, they're tough. I beat the crap out of my Dylan optics and they last a really long time. And they are just all around very, very high-end, great sunglasses. Plus, they immediately look different from all other types of sunglasses on the market because of that matte finish lens, which is exclusive to Dylan Optics. So go to thesmokingtire.com, click on the Dylan banner on our website under the Partners tab, and we'll send you a free t-shirt when you buy a pair of Dylan Optics glasses. Okay, folks, on this episode of the show, Alyssa Walker is in studio. Alyssa is a writer for Curbed, which is a division of New York Magazine. She writes about transportation. She writes about not only infrastructure, but public transportation, green transportation, and how to lay out cities and communities so that everyone is safe, taken care of. I love her writing. I've been reading it for a very long time. We talk about a bunch of interesting topics, electric cars, autonomous cars, mass transit, micro mobility, and I really love what she has to say. Most importantly, we discuss how car enthusiasts and urbanists ultimately want the same thing, We do not. We should not be fighting with each other. Car people and urban people actually, in a lot of ways, have the same goals, and we talk about how we can achieve those goals. It's Alyssa Walker from Curbed on the Smoking Tire Podcast. Thank you for coming, Alyssa. I really appreciate it. I really like your writing, except for the part where you shit on my burning car.
I'm really, really sorry about that.
It's okay. I understand your position. I do.
That car should be at the bottom of the ocean.
Well,
most
I mean,
of them.
Some of them should. Some of them should. I mean, I think it's they were already built.
That's
so
true.
It's not like,
it's
you
true.
Know, the energy and on a strictly environmental basis to build them and then immediately set them all on fire.
That's not so good.
That's a little different than if they weren't built to begin with. And I understand if that's your argument.
I was so surprised how often this happens. Like it happens.
Shipping disasters with cars.
There are multiple situations where this is there's already thousands of Porsches on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. It's like golf balls at the 16th hole of Augusta. It's like, wow, there's a lot in this lake. Yeah, and did you look into what shipping companies have had the accidents?
Oh, interesting.
Because it's the same ones over and over.
Of course.
There was a boat a couple of years ago, and Zach could pull this up, the Cougar Ace, because this boat that's burning is the Felicity Ace.
Oh, yes, right. Same,
the Cougar Ace lost, like, a lot of Mazdas and Fords. Not that long ago. The Cougar Ace was what, 2006? Wow, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I didn't realize it was that long ago, but that's the same shipping line.
And then there was one
bucks.
Off the coast of Georgia where they had like balanced the cars wrong because they had gotten heavier.
Yeah,
and they forgot to calculate that the SUVs were so much bigger.
In Mother Russia, we do not calculate the weight of cars. Yeah. And a couple of years ago, some more Porsches fell off of a carrier, and they had to restart the production line to replace them.
Oh, right. Yeah, they were
because they were very special.
Yeah,
ones.
they were very special.
They were GT2 RSs.
I did see that.
If you have any idea what those are.
That was
are.
Off the coast of France.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So it's really like a Mediterranean, you know, mid Atlantic kind of thing that's going on. Shipping cars is a dirty business, though. They burn heavy fuel to run those cargo ships. And do you know Riley Brennan? Do you follow Riley on Twitter? You should. He writes about transportation and stuff and autonomous vehicles and EVs and whatnot. And we were talking about possible applications for hydrogen as being, and cargo shipping was like right at the top of his list for that. What made you interested in transportation? Because I love your writing. I love the topics you find. I like the angles you take. I read every one of your pieces. I have for quite a few years.
That's very kind.
And I'm interested to see how people like myself who like cars but want to live in a better world, and people who want to make the world more equitable and environmentally clean and everything, like how do we all get along?
Yeah.
You know, because
that's
I think people try to be like, no, I like cars, and so this person who wants bike lanes and pedestrian safety must be some kind of asshole, you know? And I don't think that's true.
Well, they're not at odds, and I think that's what people don't really realize maybe in our polarized world. But we all kind of do want the same thing, and I think that it's been proven that these changes are broadly popular. By the time this comes out, I'll have written about this big Green New Deal report for transportation, and that you can check out on curb.com. And the plan is all about very popular ideas and just how simple it would be to deploy them, like e-bike credits for everybody, right? Like, people want to do that in this country.
E-bikes are awesome. And I think that, I mean, one of the problems with bicycling is that a lot of the places, you know, you go, you don't want to end up be sweaty when you're there. Like, I exercise every day. I may not look like it, but I do. But like, it doesn't mean I want to exercise on the way to my job.
Right.
You know, or a meeting or whatever. Like, and I think that's a reasonable position to take.
Sure.
I'm not anti-bike. I just want a bike for exercise and not, you know, but the e-bike, you know, that really does make you able to go a lot further, not necessarily be sweaty when you get there.
Yeah, and for me, who's like a fairly confident biker, but to be able to be going the same speed as the cars mm-hmm. makes me feel so much safer.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can be fast off the line and I can keep up with them and they can see me. So for me, it's a confidence builder.
Right. I have a really fast e-bike that I like. And we had the guy who made it. The company's called Vintage Electric. And we had him on here. And he was saying that the faster, if the bike goes fast enough to keep up with urban traffic, that's actually safer than saying, well, it's limited to 22 miles an hour or whatever. And I think in my experience, that's true.
Yeah.
You said you took transit to get here.
I did.
You're probably the only person to ever take. Can I tell you, like, you don't have to tell me where you live or anything, but tell them where you live. But what did you do to take public? This is interesting to me. I don't know anybody who takes public transit in LA.
Oh, wow.
So how did you get here?
There's so many of us. I took.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for my bubble,
no.
But I'm surrounded by car people.
Well, also, you live really close to where you work, and yeah. you don't really need to use it on a regular basis.
I bike here, though, sometimes yeah. on my e-bike. But yeah. So how
Again,
did you get here?
Ideas are popular. I took two buses. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Like, one really fast one and one slightly less fast one.
All right. And that was it, huh? And where did the nearest one drop you off? How far was the closest bus stop to here?
Like a 5-minute walk.
Oh, okay. Like on Jefferson?
Yeah, on Jefferson.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. If someone put a gun to my head and said, where's the nearest bus stop to your studio? I wouldn't be able to fucking tell them. I don't know. And for me, like, I'm not anti-bus. It's what we've got here. And it helps a lot of people. But I, like, and I've said this on Twitter, I'm sure you've said, like, I think public transportation that is beholden to traffic sucks.
Well, that's the problem.
Because I'm from New York.
Yeah, of course.
So, like,
I mean, it would have been a lot faster if I could have been in bus lanes,
yeah.
which would be dedicated just for buses or bikes, or another good example. But then we have these apps now it tells you exactly where to go and when it's coming, and you can see the bus, like, moving along the street. So, like, the unpredictability of it is kind of gone, and you can pay on I use my watch to pay. I use my, it's like dinging
just
on the
wave,
little
just
thing.
Wave it.
It's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Well, I'm glad they're coming up with these systems. I mean, that helps for sure. When I'm in a foreign country or something, or a city I don't know, and the Google Maps, how to use public transit, that stuff is really helpful.
Yeah.
Like in Tokyo, where
yeah.
you have absolutely no idea how to do anything. Like, you know, you live by that stuff for sure.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Maybe like 30 years.
Yeah. So do you own a car?
I do.
You must.
Yes, we have a car. We actually have two cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's fine.
One of them is my husband's 65 Mustang that
I didn't realize.
Keeps around.
I didn't realize who I was talking to. I didn't realize that there was a classic car owner in your family.
Do you
hate it?
I mean, I wish we could see it more. It's just kind of covered up in this little blanket.
It doesn't get driven?
Not that much.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's good to drive those. They work better when you drive
yeah.
them.
Yeah. No, I mean, it comes out sometimes, but yeah.
Well, you should. It's a, we're, you know, we live in, we live
it's
in.
It's very pretty.
We live in the epicenter of classic car culture in the world here, so it's important to come to Cars and Coffee, come to Malibu.
Yes, I've heard
come
of
out.
This.
Yeah.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, come
yeah.
out. I'll
I'm not sure
around.
If the car would make it there. I hope it would.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sure it would. That's tough as an ox, that thing. So some of my favorite things that you write about are how certain active decisions, whether it's government or neighborhood councils or what, you know, affect, you know, in people have in effort to preserve certain ways of life can kind of negatively affect everybody else. I live in Venice, so I, you know, the tents, the homeless situation there, the NIMBYism that goes on there, you know, there's a guy who lives on my street that like goes to Africa and builds houses and Habitat for Humanity every year, but like had an aneurysm because a homeless person was using his outdoor shower. You know, I mean, it's like, it's that kind of stuff. That's what it's like to live in Venice right now.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. Like, is our system totally broken where people don't see that raising everyone's quality of life at once can happen?
That's a very good way to put it. I mean, and it's also related particularly in Venice, to transportation changes too, because the same groups of people that are trying to fight permanent supportive housing or shelters or all these other solutions also tried to stop the road diets a few years ago, right? So it's this idea that you have control beyond, it's not even like not in my backyard, it's like not on my public street that goes in front of my house or on this, the one housing project that's been so hotly debated is a parking lot that is owned by the city.
Yeah, that, see, this one I think is really interesting. And you wrote a great piece on it for Curbed, and it literally hit close to home because I live around the corner from there. What you're talking about is a literal parking lot.
The ugliest parking lot.
It is an ugly parking lot. It's about three blocks from the beach. It's a pay lot. It's not like it's a free parking lot. They charge like between $6 and $30 a day, depending on the day of the week and the time of the year. Yeah. And there was a proposal to build a multi-use complex on this parking lot, which included an even bigger parking lot, right? More parking spaces, retail, I believe restaurants, and apartments above it, right? Mm-hmm. Not all of which were low income, but some were designated to low income. And what went so wrong with that? It wasn't an ugly building. I saw the proposal.
I think it's very cool. And even if it was ugly, who cares?
There's ugly buildings in Venice.
Yeah, there are.
We have some really ugly buildings in Venice, too.
Very ugly buildings.
They let you build fucking anything. They don't give a shit.
I would point to, you know, the mansion across the street and say, now that's ugly. It's this thought that this vision of whatever your neighborhood is should be maybe frozen in time, except for you, new homeowner who moves there and decides that you can like peel the roof off of your little bungalow and put like this glass balcony on top of it. But nothing else should change. Everything else should be exactly the way it is and kept that way. And the interesting thing about Venice is over the last few decades, you know, there used to be a very large Black community in Venice that has basically been zoned out of their own neighborhood by people buying up housing, displacing people, and then it would be like a duplex or a triplex that became a single family home.
A single family home, yeah.
And so you're actually losing the housing stock, first of all. And then you're also...
Yeah, I read that the number of units in Venice in the last 30 years is down by 20%.
Yeah, there's
like
fewer places to live.
It's an enormous decline in the actual number of places to live.
So you wonder why all of a sudden, and not to say that there hasn't always been people in Venice, you know, living in cars, living at the beach, of course, like this is, you know, it's always been that way. But if you see this dramatic, you know, increase in people who don't have access to stable or affordable housing, it very often is in those same neighborhoods. A lot of the people that I talk to who are homeless used to live in apartments the neighborhoods where they are homeless right now. I mean, and because you have jobs or connections or family or, you know, or support system.
Yeah, a decent number of those folks actually have jobs too, right? It's not like they're totally... I don't have the word. It's not like they're idle. You know, like they go to work, but from a tent
also,
or from a car.
And the funny thing about the boardwalk, too, where everybody was like, get these people off the boardwalk. Oh, but that's the person who actually sells like wind chimes that is the reason I love the boardwalk. Oh, wait, they actually live here. Oh, you know, just this like where we have this issue all across the city where we just are suddenly we're going to do something about this. And I think we finally have decided that as a city. But there are still these groups of people who are trying everything they can to say, this can't be near me.
Yeah.
But would you rather have people living on your sidewalk near you? I don't understand that.
Yeah. And I think it sucks because, like, I can understand why someone who is upper middle class, but whose most of their net worth is so tied into the value of their home. They paid a lot of money for the home. They expect a return on that investment. And if there's a visible tent or a visible couple of RVs the line of their house is now, you know, down, and they go, well, why don't you just give these people like a patch of land in the desert, you know? And
that's
a very
common refrain. Yeah. Why do you get to live at the beach and they don't?
Right.
There's a reason people live at the beach.
Well, it's like because they have a community as well, and it's sad you know, when I walk by tent encampments or RVs, I'm not scared. I'm sad. I wish there was something more I could do. You know, I give people money, you know, sometimes, but like that's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
But it sucks to have people from other parts of the country sneer at you like you live in this sort of how it's like it's a failure of progressivism.
Right. It's not actually. It's actually the right wingers creeping back in and pretending that they are.
A kind of, right?
It's just this like ricochet of these people who say that they are, you know, they always say I'm a lifelong Democrat. That's how you mm-hmm. and then you're like, but
the dot dot dot. Yeah.
So there's and yes, people have every right to be angry about this for the right reasons. Like, we have been failed by our city. They promised they would do things and they did not do them, and we have massive corruption scandals that are all related to the development of these buildings.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the money is going has been, you know, misattributed, you know, for a long time. So we have every right to be angry, but we need solutions that actually house people in the neighborhoods where they are currently homeless.
Yeah, and I always say, like, would you rather look at an impoverished person coming out of their apartment or coming out of their tent? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, what makes the neighborhood like look better? You know what? I don't see how not allowing these types of developments in these neighborhoods would improve the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I mean, I'll
especially because we're staring at the alternative right now.
It's not
the alternative is not like sweeping people up to fucking Riverside, what people probably
that's
want.
What people
to
want. That's what people want. Yeah, in my neighborhood, and I talk about this all the time. You know, I live within a few blocks of 5 supportive housing projects. These are the most beautiful buildings. They are the nicest people. We have cool mixed use things on the ground floor. So you get like a cafe or like a community space out of it. It's really exciting. But what I try to tell people is like, these are the families that like go to our school. These are my kids' friends. Like, I don't know who you think is going to move into these buildings and be so threatening to you or your property values. They're people who are our friends and our neighbors. So I don't know. I don't know in people's minds like what you would think is going to happen here. We have to build not just housing for, you know, families that are homeless, but also we need to build 200,000 new units. This is a story that, you know, has been published this week about our requirements that the state is putting down, and that is a lot of housing that we need to build as a city. And it's been a problem traditionally because of wealthy neighborhoods like the one you live in that has done everything they can to stop it up until this point.
And you just wrote a piece I was just reading this morning actually about Bel Air.
Oh yes.
And how one thing that could alleviate one of the most frustrating parts of my week is getting over the fucking hill.
Yeah.
And for those who have no idea what I mean,
you put it really well.
The 405 freeway goes up north-south through Los Angeles, and when it gets to the mountains, it goes up and over, and on the other side is the valley. and I have to go to the valley a couple times a week because I drive cars up in the mountains. And I leave at my house at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's fine, and then we come back, just like today, at noon, and it's awful.
Yep.
And so there's a proposal to build a subway that could help carry people from one side of the hill to the other, goes underneath the mountain, like subways do, and the citizens of Bel Air don't want to have air vents from the subway. Air vents, not stations.
They don't want a station for sure.
Of course not a station. Forget a station. Forget like how their housekeepers would get to work,
right,
by the way.
No,
but
yeah, it wouldn't solve that problem at all.
That might solve that problem a little bit.
Yeah.
But an air vent.
Yes.
They don't want air vents in Bel Air for the subway that would go 100 feet underneath the mountain.
The tunnel would be so deep there would actually be no shafts in their neighborhood.
Yeah. I mean, it's yeah, this just is crazy, right?
Next level, because again, it's they're worried about their own property values. They think somehow like having a tunnel far beneath, which they would be compensated for, by the way. If you tunnel under someone's property, they have to pay you, yeah. by the way. But yeah, they seem to think that this would lower their property values or do so. They've come up with all these things now. Like they think it would break the Stone Canyon Dam and like water would like flood out or something. They just come up with all these different scenarios.
The engineers in the room are just rolling their eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure they like Metro hires no engineers to look at any of this tunnel.
And so they want a, and I shit you not, they want a monorail.
Well, yeah, the other proposal... And I don't even know why Metro is entertaining this other option, but the other option would be a monorail that would run along the 405 freeway, uh-huh. right? So you've seen the transit lines that already go along the freeways mm-hmm. here, like the Green Line.
Yeah,
yeah right? It's, I don't know if you've ever been on, stood on that platform. You can't even, like, talk.
Because you're literally in the middle of 10 lanes
like
of traffic.
And you're, like, breathing in. Yeah. And my kids are, like, when we go ride it, they're, like, got their hands over their ears. They're, like, this is so scary, you know. And so it's a bad solution. But also, if they did that, it would be very hard to put a station at UCLA, which is the most transit, mm-hmm. you know, necessary part of this
whole
process.
Why would it be hard to put a station at UCLA?
Because it would have to, you make the people from UCLA walk out to the 405,
oh,
right? They
oh,
would,
yeah.
it wouldn't like, you know, veer over,
oh.
or they could do that, but the easiest thing to do would be tunnel it, go from where it's already
go
going
it
underground and go where it needs to go. This has been the problem. Instead of putting transit where it needs to go, we put it like where it's easiest to
yeah.
put it, right? So they've become, I laugh that they've become like Lyle Landley Simpson monorail fans because they are like all of a sudden like every, you know, email they send to Metro is like monorail, monorail.
Oh my
but
God.
Just simply so. And they will not use it. It's clear they don't need to have anything to do with it. But it is like the last gasp of this, like, don't build subways, which is we've been dealing with this forever here, and it's kind of over. Like, even Beverly Hills finally came around after, like, 10 years of lawsuits.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so the metro that goes to Santa Monica now,
mm-hmm.
They started building that right around when I moved here
mm-hmm.
in 2009.
That's
and
right.
It's been open.
Yep.
3 years now or something like that?
The last part of it, probably a little more than that, but yes,
okay.
yes.
3-5 years,
yeah.
whatever it is.
Yep.
Has it worked? I don't really pay it close attention. I see the trains, but but you read about it. I don't necessarily study this stuff. Has it worked?
Well, the thing about the Expo line that's really interesting is, again, we didn't allow for increasing housing density along the Expo line when we built it, right? So you if you ride on it someday, hopefully you will. You leave Santa Monica.
I have ridden on it. No, I've ridden on it a couple
times. Okay.
I've been on it. I don't study the ridership
right,
numbers,
right.
is what I'm saying.
Right.
But I've been on it. Yes, we've been
so
on it.
So it's you know the right of way was great because it was an old. It was an old rail line that
right.
was there that we basically just swapped out, you know, 30 years later. And what was, you know, it's great because it connects like Santa Monica, a lot of tourist destinations with downtown, really important. But in the in-between part, if you ride through it, all of a sudden you're riding through these neighborhoods of single family homes.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't done anything to increase like the number of people who could actually live near the transit. And going,
except like in Culver City, right?
Right.
They've done
but,
Culver
yeah, that's
City.
What I was
they've
say.
Done, a, I think, a good job.
Right.
These those
different
beautiful
city than,
new
different city than Los Angeles.
Good
right?
point.
So, yeah.
yeah. Well, we have a complicated system here.
Yeah,
where
you go
places
through like multiple
LA
cities
are
just
not
to
in LA.
Yeah,
right.
just to get to downtown.
Right.
But Culver City is a great example. Like they finally have come around and said we're going to add all this density around the rail right there, and some of that is located in the city of LA. But then you go through these neighborhoods; they're zoned for single family homes, and what the city has been trying to do ever since the plans for the Expo line originally were made is try to slowly upzone some of those neighborhoods and say, hey, maybe you could build like a 4-unit building across the street from the train station. And there's been lawsuits from some of these same people that we keep talking about that have done everything they can to stop
yeah.
just literally like duplexes, triplexes, you know, as if it was the end of the world. So it'll work better if more people have access to it. Because right now, there's a lot of like parking lots that people drive to it. And, you know, they drive to take the train, which
mm-hmm.
is great. I'm glad they take the train for part of it. But ridership is pretty good on the train lines. You know, we've been through this, you know, very catastrophic event. And you know, we've managed to keep our transit system running. Yeah. But right, we're in a real point right here where we need to actually put more people closer to it.
Right. That makes total sense. But to jump back to what you just said about the catastrophic event, I assume we're talking about the global pandemic.
That's correct.
It's definitely not over.
Yeah.
We seemed in 2019, it seemed like the next big thing in 2019 was going to be the sharing economy.
Mm.
The Uberization of everything.
Yes.
These the robo-taxis, and everyone was going to ditch their cars and just start riding Ubers. And all of a sudden, sharing stuff got real sketchy. And people were like, fuck all that. I'm buying a private jet and a yacht.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Like, I'm not sharing anything.
Yeah, I'm moving to Idaho.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to go somewhere where there's no taxes, have a 150-foot yacht and a Gulf Stream.
Right.
And make sure I don't have to come into contact with any humans ever. So, you know, is the sharing economy totally derailed, you think?
Well, first of all, let's remember that a lot of people did not have the choice not to share their air on a daily basis. And our transit was free. They made the buses free for almost 2 years for that reason, to really make sure that people who needed to use it to get around could have, you know, every single, burden alleviated from them. So first of all, let's keep transit as safe as possible so the people who have to ride it don't have another choice are kept as alive. There is such a funny question about, you know, what's happening in particular with something like Uber. Let's just use Uber because they're such a great example. There's a new show coming out this week on Showtime. Super pumped.
I read the book.
Good.
Did you read the book?
Mike Isaac,
Battle for Uber. It's an excellent book. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's mandatory reading.
This is going to be very exciting. I'm going to get screeners of the show, and I'm so excited to watch it because it's coming at this very important moment, right? It's this time that is like, I love having the annotations
the
over
assets.
Here.
He's got assets ready.
This is so good.
And the audience sees what we see,
nice.
Too. So yeah.
Yeah, so it's just interesting timing because it does seem like Uber is failing possibly like very dramatically, but not necessarily because people don't want to share or, you know, it's not that it's a... It's not the shared mobility option is it necessarily going to survive, but more that like one that isn't built upon an economy where we actually pay people to drive the vehicles.
Right.
And they've also fought
Uber's plan was to very quickly get was an assumed autonomous car model. And as we know, the idea of privately owned autonomous cars in anywhere in the next 10 years is complete horseshit.
Yes.
And anyone who tells you otherwise is selling something very expensive that they really need you to buy because their whole business model is based on this lie.
Yeah. Well, you summed it up pretty well. But yeah, I mean, this idea that like we're not going to pay people. And also they really did fight a lot of the electrification efforts. You know, there's all these or even like incentivizing people to actually share the vehicles or doing these like there's a system or there's a service here in LA called Metro Micro where it's kind of just like a ride sharing thing. They use vans and it'll come pick you up in like a service area.
So they're like kind of golf carty sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they're free. I think
Places, yeah, they have all different types of pilot programs, but it's exactly that, solving that like problem that we were talking about. So you don't have to drive to the train station, or you're out late, and you could spend like a dollar and it's to get around. But they pay people, and it's subsidized, and it's part of our transit system. But this idea that we were somehow going to give them money. Like billions of dollars for them to lose billions of dollars on this while they were actively like trying to undermine our real transit system.
Yeah.
Like you could see that like they destroyed public transit in some cities because they convinced the city leaders that they should invest in them instead of the buses.
What drove me nuts about the book. And it was totally, because it's the same thing that is so clearly what Tesla is doing right now, which is you get enough people to get hooked on the service, right? And I use Uber and I use Lyft, like, and the app thing where you watch your driver, like, it's It's what can I say? It's great. Yeah. From the rider's perspective, yeah. What can I say? It's great.
Well, I have it for the bus, too. It also tells you when it's coming.
Yeah, sure. It makes the old system of calling a cab and hoping they show up and find right. you seem very archaic.
Right.
And when you get enough a core mass of people to be into it, but you work outside of the laws. And then when they try to regulate or impose some kind of, whether it's unionization or commercial liability insurance or anything,
yeah. All that stuff.
You convince your users that the man is trying to stop your disruption of these corrupt old systems, and then they just barrel through it, that you can't undo what's been done. And that's what Tesla's doing right now in this bullshit full self-driving scam, is if they get enough people to go, NHTSA, don't take my toy away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it's the same thing. And when I read it in Super Pumped, I was like, oh, that's that's how this scam works.
Yeah. And then you also have money coming in from, like, Saudi Arabia.
Right, yes.
That's slightly different than the Tesla aspect. But yeah, but that, I mean, you explained it so well. It's like, especially with Uber, remember when you would open the app when there was all these conversations about AB5, what you're talking about, this law that they were trying to pass that said you couldn't really be a contractor, you need to be paid, you need to be, you know, get benefits. And then they proposed this ballot measure that it was absolutely bonkers from a legislative perspective, and it actually like said, not only are we going to create a different type of, you know, employment class, to overturn this it will require a 7/8 majority of a vote. It's all in there.
Yeah.
And it passed because they turned everybody into like lobbyists, like,
yeah, with that using
and
the
you
app.
Had to use the app and it'd be like, hey, vote for this, you know.
Yeah.
It was just so this abuse of technology to I don't even know what their goal is now. I mean, they I guess Uber Eats is now their is how they're going to make money, but It has come at the cost of, like, not only, you know, the well-being of drivers or, you know, and transit and all these things, but also just, like, we were supposed to be past this by now. The green transition that we were, the just transition, the new Green Deal. Sorry, I've said that wrong. We were supposed to be past this by now. So the Green New Deal, this just transition, like, we're supposed to have everything, like, electrified and publicly accessible. And it shouldn't be privatized at this point. Transportation should be for everybody.
Yeah. It's very frustrating. I mean, I'm interested to see what they do with the TV version of it.
Yes, it's going to be great.
But I can't recommend the book highly enough.
It's
the
really,
book
really
is
good.
So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wrote a piece recently talking about the term accident.
Yes.
About a car accident.
Right.
And that you think we should get rid of this term. And I really liked the point you made in this piece. What is wrong with the term car accident?
Yeah, so this was a story I did about a book by Jesse Singer. There Are No Accidents. She is an amazing transportation advocate and has been researching this book for a very long time. I remembered, like, she worked on a campaign which was called Crash Not Accident when she was at Transportation Alternatives. That's where she still works. And it was just basically like that words matter in this situation, because if you say accident, it makes it seem like it was inevitable. It couldn't have been avoided. And so many things that occur with car crashes in this country, which are killing 40,000 people a year and killed more than that last year, probably. We don't have the final numbers yet, are completely preventable. And so to use the language, and you see it, like, her book is so great because it traces, I knew about, like, how, you know, car companies tried to convince us they're accidents, so you can't, like, it's not just that you can't, you know, ascribe accountability, but you also can't start to put together these patterns, because you start to see, oh, the same people die on this street. Oh, the same people die in this car. The same people, you know, you start to see that it's bigger than perhaps just like a one-off event.
Decisions are made
and by people in power.
Often with some type of knowledge that is very uncomfortable.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Have you watched American Auto?
No, I've
Do you
not.
Know what it is?
No.
It's like The Office, but a car company.
Oh, boy.
And it's satirical, but, you know, There's an episode recently where there is a literal discussion on, you know, should they do this recall? The car could pop out of a park and could roll.
Yeah.
And should and they're literally sitting there doing the math of, well, how many people would have to die in order for us to...
Oh, my gosh. I need to see this. Yeah.
It's fucking real. I mean, that's a that debate...
Pain Motors. That's so great.
Yes, it's called Pain Motors. Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't heard of this. I need to definitely...
It's you know, it's a comedy, but...
It's a little dark for me.
But if you know about this stuff, like, you know that the jokes are only slightly satirized versions of real conversations that go on.
And that's how we do road safety, too. You won't get that stop sign on your street until at least two people die there, right? I mean, it's really true. And that's how they calculate how things are made. And then they make it up for debate, and then the neighbors will be like, well, I don't want to drive 2 minutes slower. That sounds ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I would never want my commute slowed down by 2 minutes. I will say no to this.
Or maybe someone programs the California roll into their autonomous and tries to literally argue
that
is the same as zero, actually.
Who would possibly do that?
So in a world where, I mean, obviously, like, we could use the word accident because most people didn't try to run over that child. Most people didn't intend to. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't, it could be a flaw in the visibility of the car. It could be a flaw in that the person was on their phone. Mm-hmm. It could be a flaw in the design of the road where someone has done this math and this is where people tend to cross.
Yep.
And yet.
That's it.
So other than, you know, convincing 350 million people to no longer use the word accident, what can we do?
Well, the car size is a big problem. I mean, I'm sure you mentioned, like, the child, you know, not meaning to hit a child. I mean, you can't even see a child. And there's this, like, really amazing story that was done where I have no idea what car makes or models are. They're just named after mountains or something like that. But there was, like, an SUV, like Sierra or something.
I think the one you were talking about was a Sierra
Yukon
Denali.
Or something.
Yes,
yeah.
It was.
Oh, two types of mountains. Great. and it was, like, 17 kids seated on the ground.
Yeah.
They could see the 17th kid's head.
Did you ever see that chart, Zach? It was eyeline from the Yukon Denali.
Yeah.
Over the hood, and you could they had a photo. They had so many kids. They had a whole fucking baseball team worth of kids.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. And we talk about this a lot. I think cars have gotten too big. I think that our insane tax laws that incentivize certain types of people to buy vehicles that are over a certain weight and size is complete insanity. As a small business owner myself, I was considering buying a truck for the shop, which we do need for a variety of reasons. And my accountant said, "Oh, you got to get a Super Duty." Why? I'm not towing anything.
Yeah.
Because I could save tens of thousands of dollars in taxes to buy this bigger, heavier, more wasteful thing.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane.
Yes.
But also, our roads are the same size they've been since, like, the 80s.
Oh, that part's and the damage that those heavier cars are doing to the roads is much worse.
Yeah. I mean, you can buy passenger cars right now that can't go over bridges legally in New York. Like, you buy a brand new, if you buy one of these new GM fucking, if you buy the new electric Hummer, like, it can't go over, like, the Brooklyn Bridge. It's, like, literally overweight.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the Brooklyn Bridge. I don't want to get it wrong, but it's definitely a major New York bridge.
Sure, the bridge
where it is over the weight limit.
It's not in the best shape either, so, yeah.
We're going to save the world with 9,000-pound trucks, didn't you know?
Well,
you didn't read about
you
that?
Just don't have a choice. I mean, it's for a lot of people who do work. Yeah, it's great. We're electrifying some of them. I think some of the technology with, like, the F-150 and what they're doing is really cool, and like that people can use the batteries for all sorts of things, like to work.
It, yeah. Oh, the yeah. Drive. Oh, Will Sable Courtney. Let's look at eight cars that legally can't cross the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
It was, I'm glad I got it right. I'm glad it was the Brooklyn Bridge.
But the electric versions are going to be heavier, right? And they're not going to do anything about the 17 kids that are going to be able to line up in front of them. So we have to really have a moment
here. So we've
here.
Got the first four are all Super Duties, and then we've got the Escalade, ESV, the Navigator. Oh no, not the Lexus LX570. We like that truck. The Sequoia Platinum, the Rolls Drop Bed.
Oh wow, that one, huh?
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Where's the weight in that one?
Rolls? Oh, everywhere. The weight is everywhere,
it's like
my friend.
Solid gold.
They are very, very, very solid. our lifts here at Westside Collector
They're
Car
like
Storage.
Straining up.
No, we have a limit, 6,000-pound limit.
Oh,
and
wow.
I have a customer.
So you can't take some of these cars.
Correct.
Yeah.
I have a customer with
the
Rolls Royce that I can't.
That should be like
the
rule. Just be like, we cannot. Your car cannot come in this parking garage. We will not allow it.
Well, it can't. We have downstairs. Downstairs, we have a Ram TRX, which a customer has, and I'm glad he likes his truck, but I find it to be one of the most loathsome vehicles on the planet. I had 8 miles per gallon for the week I drove it.
Oh, my God.
It's so big that it literally inconveniences people in other cars. if you park it in a regular-sized parking space, neither of the cars on either side of you can open their doors. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and other countries have decided they'll either charge you, you know, you'll be taxed based on weight.
Mm.
You could drive them, things like VMT taxes or something like that. You basically have to be charged on how much you drive them. You could be charged on how much they pollute. You know, we have all these options for disincentivizing these types of vehicles, but we choose to do, you know, none of those things.
Because my freedom. Because my freedom.
Your freedom is very important.
And my freedom is extremely important. can we talk about tunnels for a minute?
Sure.
You've written a lot about the tunnels, the Tesla tunnels.
The tunnels.
In Las Vegas. They're very silly, I think.
There's more coming.
Yeah, in Florida, right?
Yeah,
are they doing Miami?
I mean, they say, but
it's
going to happen.
How do you think a private company can convince a city government to do something that so many studies have said straight up doesn't work? How do you think that works?
This is the big question, right? Because I went to that tunnel, the test tunnel, which is technically in the city of Hawthorne. I don't know if people don't know that, but like it's a city we have too many cities here in LA, but it's
not
a city,
part of LA.
Not part of LA. Yeah. It's its own city where SpaceX has their, well, I don't know. I guess they're still there, but like the tunnel company has moved to Austin now, I guess, or something. So the Boring Company had this big party when they opened the tunnel. It's a very short tunnel, very bumpy tunnel. And it was amazing how many people were there that I talked to who were from Chicago, from City of LA, city council members, like all these elected officials. And they had been completely scammed. Like, and I don't, I think they want a solution. They know that traffic is bad.
Right.
They've been convinced that there's just some magic bullet that's going to somehow change everything. But to get to that party, once again, I took transit. I think I'm probably the only person that took transit.
I remember your article about getting you did two pieces,
yeah,
right? One about
pieces.
Getting to the party and then one about the party itself. Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
And I was just sitting there like waiting for the train, you know, and I was just like, literally it's like two blocks away. This is the answer. Like to put like multiple people
in
on
one vehicle
that goes on a dedicated route and also underground. And I was just sitting there being like, they're literally digging a tunnel like underneath the ground to drive cars through. And I mean, literally just look up. Do any of those people take transit to work? It's right there. I mean, it was just like a moment where I was like, surely I'm missing something. Like there must be. But I think everybody wants there to be a solution like this. I'd be great if there was.
Well, because you see, they saw a movie once where, you know, some autonomous vehicle, you know, drove down the side of an apartment building.
Well, they made this one. Yeah, no, they made this very compelling rendering, this animation, and it showed, like, cars being dropped down on these car elevators like you have in your car storage, you know, facility, and they drop below street level, and we did get to ride on one of those. Great. But then once you get down there, there's not like infinite space under the ground, which is really what they were selling, like that we could just tunnel anywhere, you know?
And then in Vegas, they built this thing that's literally just a single car tunnel where human-driven Teslas drive
back
through.
Back to that again, yeah.
We've got flashing colored lights to make it a little disco-y.
Yes.
And allegedly, were you there for CES?
I did not go.
Did you see the video, though?
Yes, I saw the video.
There was a traffic jam in the tunnel.
Surprise.
Like, it turns out.
Like, I mean,
silly.
Like, they still think, somebody was trying to say that, like, you know, well, it'll be different when they tried to be like, well, it'll be different when it's autonomous. Okay, how?
Yeah.
It like that was the one I really. But
the
also
cars
like
are shapeshifters. I just, when people get out of the cars, they just disappear.
Pass that buck, man. Kick that can down the road. However you have to.
And then this is not anybody's primary concern, but like, I can't take my kids in it. Not that it, like, I would use that. I would make them walk the short distance. But for people who actually have like mobility challenges, right? If you were someone in a wheelchair, say, or used a walker who didn't want to walk the convention center, which is a huge facility,
it
would be great to have some ways to get around it. They actually can't even use it. You can't like take your assistive device into this car.
So
that's like
a problem.
What did we solve? We solved no problem.
Yeah. Other than a company got a lot of money from a city government.
And everybody, they kept yelling at me and saying, well, no, we're designing this 16-passenger customized transit vehicle.
Oh, yeah?
Never did. And then eventually, just one day, Elon Musk was like, it's actually just Teslas and tunnels. And I was like, oh, wow. How many times did your PR people that no longer exist call me and yell at me and say that is not what you're doing? And you just did it.
They just added the most expensive lane to any road.
Yeah.
Instead of adding a fourth lane on Las Vegas Boulevard, they just
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's.
And you've read the book called Traffic, right?
Yes, that is a good book.
It's a great book. Yeah. I talk about it like probably twice a week.
Yeah.
I talk about this book. And
he
lays out so clearly why just adding lanes, whether they're up, down, fucking left, right, like that shit just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It does not work. And it usually makes it worse.
We have the best example right here of the 405 freeway. Yeah. We added, and again, like we're finally doing monorail or, you know, subway. We finally, like 20 years later, but we decided to add another lane to the 405. We spent $1 billion to do it. And every traffic study that comes out since we finished it, travel times get worse.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great job.
Good job, LA. great use of this money. Do you think the airport train will help? The airport train might help.
Help what?
I don't know.
We're
something?
Building the airport train. It's great. Like for me to use it though, I'll still have to take 3 trains to get to the airport. And then there's the people mover also.
Right.
As of technically like a 4-seat ride to get to the airport where I could just take the bus to Union Station and get on the flyaway and take a 1-seat ride.
Do you think it's just designed to get people to park somewhere besides the airport and bring them that last half mile?
It's funny that you mentioned that because you know we're building the largest car rental storage facility in the world right now.
Really?
As part of that.
Oh,
yeah.
I did not know that.
Conrack. Just remember that word because I'll be
where
screaming.
Is it? Just on Century somewhere?
It's just right at the end of the people mover. So basically when you get off the people mover to get out of the airport, it takes you there. That's like the gateway because they assume that
you're going to be ready.
You're like, yes, the train will be there, but look at all these cars we have. Mm. And what is just remarkable is like, okay, this, you know, building a parking garage, great. Like, but they keep trying to sell these ideas through as like the Olympics or, you know, they keep trying to say there's like these big events that we're going to need all this. Like people are going to come rent cars and tourism in LA and convertibles or whatever. But like, we don't want the tourists driving here. Like, are you crazy? Like,
yeah.
It's really not the goal here. Like,
yeah.
We should have thought much harder about the airport connections. And like, yes, it's great the train will finally go there, but we also need, you know, better systems to get people directly to downtown, because you're still going to have to, you're going to have to take three trains.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this the thing where private industries masquerade a venture that will benefit them as something that will benefit the public? So they're like, we're going to make this train, and but the first stop is a rental car place.
Maybe you change your mind. Here we have a Hertz right here.
If you make the train really difficult to use or whatever, then it's like someone else will benefit. Like the HOV lanes that after whatever 2 years converted to FastPass.
Right.
Right. And that's made whoever built that road like a ton of money, but mm-hmm. it hasn't actually alleviated anything because it doesn't matter if you have two people in the car.
Yeah.
You have to have the FastPass.
Yeah. And actually our like FastPass lanes are very successful, and they point to how, they actually have gotten people to, shift their behavior in a way. We've actually have made a lot of money. It goes into transit. And there's another cool thing where if you take the train enough, or train or the Silver Line, there's all these different dedicated buses and trains that you could take, you can actually get a credit on your FastPass.
Oh, really?
So like,
oh, that's cool.
It would be great if
Why do I not know that?
Nobody knows these things. Like, it's like this is like, something that like LA made up, came up with, right? So when we talk about something like how do we, try to drive less as a society, like congestion pricing, which sounds very... It sounds very unpopular and like something you don't want to do.
Actually,
like to have to
one
pay.
One of the things I had written down was congestion pricing, because it's something that you can imagine basically everybody would complain about.
Yeah.
Except the people who don't have cars.
Right.
Might make their life a little better.
And as long as the money goes right to improving transit service,
right,
in that zone or wherever you've decided. But again, like we're studying these things and we have this way to disincentivize. Maybe it's people with SUVs, pay a different price. Maybe it's people who have electric versus non-electric, whatever we decide. We have the ability to take that money and give it to the people who actually need it to get around. So we should be exploring these options.
Well, you've got like London's got the congestion mm-hmm, charge. Mm-hmm. Paris just announced a car-free zone. I actually think that the shutting down of Times Square to cars has been very successful. I don't think it's completely wrecked traffic in the way that people said it would. You brought up the road diet earlier, which I think had some mixed results. I think it probably worked in Mar Vista. The traffic down Venice Boulevard through Mar Vista is not as bad as I thought it would be when they first put that there. They tried to do it down the beach in Vista Del Mar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to live in Playa. I didn't like that one.
No, I mean,
I was not a fan of that one.
But
that one appeared overnight.
Yeah. Well, that one was in response to all the lawsuits that the city was settling, because people were getting killed and people kept suing the city and saying, why aren't you making this safer? And so that was basically an emergency measure that went into place without much consideration, perhaps, to make sure that the city wasn't losing like millions and millions of dollars. Yeah.
That.
No, I mean, you wouldn't know. And it is very frustrating. Like the changes could be made in one place might solve a problem, but unless they're made citywide in a network, like, yeah, it's great to ride your bike down Venice Boulevard through Mar Vista. Like I feel very safe. Like I take my kids on that bike lane, but then it evaporates. And like, what are you supposed to do? Like, are people going to use that to replace a car trip that's further than just going from one end of Mar Vista to the other?
Right.
So unless we decide to do that everywhere at once, nobody's going to be safer or change their behavior, or it's just going to be the same people who already feel comfortable or have to use a bike to get around.
Yeah, is it possible? Because our roads in this city, it feels like they're pretty dense to begin with. It doesn't seem like to me that there's a lot of room to spare. And for those who have absolutely no idea, we're talking about the term road diet. In a few places around LA, they took three-lane roads or two-lane roads and removed a lane and made a bike lane, basically. And some parking spaces. And in some cases, they used parking spaces to create a semi-protected bike lane that I think has mixed results, because
it's true. It's not truly separated.
It's not truly separated,
yeah.
And
no,
people
right.
have to They can't, if they're making a turn, a right turn across it, they can't always see the cyclist on the other side of the...
it's not ideal, yeah.
So what is the best way to protect a bike lane? Concrete jersey barriers? Because you can see over them?
I mean, I love... That's what New York has been doing. They've just been laying them down, like, just ugly as shit. Like, just like... It's like your debt has just have construction projects going through your city, which is actually great. Like, it's an emergency. Like, we should do that. We should do that this summer. Everyone should just get biking, you know, like put the barriers down, because the bike lanes are already there. Just protect them, yeah. Right? It's not going to really ruin your life.
We could do metal K-rails that would be less ugly than jersey barriers.
The best thing to do is when you go to other places that are not here in the United States. Yeah, you're up on the sidewalk with, you know, pedestrians. Yeah. I mean, and then you could add more hardening if you need to, but like, it's just better to be everybody separated. You can walkers go one place, cyclists go one place, mm-hmm. cars go one place, buses, you know, just
were you part of that group that put together the concept for New York City, the one New York City block of here's how we could, it was in New York Magazine?
Yeah, I wasn't part of that, but that was, yeah, my coworkers
that.
Justin Davidson was the
one
who wrote it.
Is
yeah.
it online? The map. It was very interesting.
They just took a block, they really didn't do anything that groundbreaking. They actually took a lot of things that had already been tested in New York City to do kind of what we were exactly talking about, like help all the users of the street.
That?
It's Justin Davidson curbed.
It was so interesting. They literally took a real block of New York. And they just changed a few key things.
Yes,
there
that's
it is.
It.
A plan to perfect the New York City street.
Yeah.
So here's the block that they did. I don't know exactly what it is. And there's the slider. And the stuff that they did, they didn't ruin it. It's not like cars aren't there anymore.
No.
They just did some very basic protect pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
Accessible trash cans and recycling bins, nice, attractive, safe outdoor dining areas. And it's a really,
trash
really
can.
Interesting story.
Yeah, the
story.
Trash cans are the most popular. Everybody zoomed right in on because the trash in New York is out of...
Yeah,
that's the
yeah.
one thing we don't have is just like mountains of trash.
Well,
looks
like, for people listening, what they went from is like a 5-lane road that was just mixed of vans and buses and cabs and everything with parking on the left side. And then now the left side is a bike lane. The middle two lanes are for cars. The right lane is dedicated to buses. And then they ate that. They took that fifth space, and that's what the
and it's outdoor dining.
Outdoor dining goes to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very nice design. And it's, I mean, I other than in this rendering, it seems to have not affected traffic flow. I don't know what would actually happen, but...
Well, one thing, I think the most important thing, which is, it's in the text here, it's not really, you can't really see it, but like, deliveries are such a problem in New York City. Less so here, our streets are a little bit wider, and I think people are just more tolerant, I guess, of like these Amazon vans zipping around everywhere. But like, if a vehicle needs to stop in New York to make a delivery, they're just stopping the street for many, you know, nobody can go around them, and you know, it creates huge headaches, and then a lot of people have actually been killed. So this idea to not only provide like loading zones, right, which a lot of places have, but they're not really, you know, they're other people parking them, mostly cops. But this idea that you're right sizing the delivery vehicles, and I think that's a huge, we're not thinking enough about something like that in LA, right? And so, yes, we think we have all this space and, you know, whatever, but like, we need safer vehicles, we need more bike messengers, we need things like that, small little golf cart type things you were talking about, right? So we just need more ways to like, very easily move things around our city that don't require these giant trucks and vans that are just really detrimental to our streets.
Well, we've had kind of a paradigm shift in like Amazon deliveries, food delivery, Uber Eats. Like we have far more vehicles bringing people or things to locations than we ever did before.
It's so
we have
much.
To adjust for that.
Yeah. And or make it just easier for people to go to the corner store in their neighborhood instead of maybe just ordering things all the time.
During the pandemic, you know, there's a little grocery store in Venice that has no parking lot.
Yeah.
And it's like a deli corner store.
Yeah.
And they had everything the whole time.
Yeah.
They had fucking toilet paper in March of 2020. Everything.
See? They know how to source.
It was literally just like, oh, the grocery store that people can only walk to.
Right.
They can only take home what they can carry.
See, that's how we should be thinking. Yeah, you don't know hoarding.
Yeah, it was great. It was really awesome. Shout out to Allen's. Yeah. Allen's Market, what's up? Love you guys. It made a lot of sense.
But those types of corner stores, like, you can't add those in a lot of neighborhoods.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. Like, we aren't allowed to have these very basic, you know, amenities that same thing, like, you know, a duplex, or, you know, it's just like, it's the same kind of issues where we aren't allowing these types of things. We have to have something like a strip mall that has, like, you know, 17 parking spaces.
Yeah. And I mean, there's regulations requiring that.
Yes.
You know, I as I explained to you here, I was building a parking lot and the city made me build a parking lot for my parking lot.
I love that. It's
I mean, it's
example.
Not, it's like,
yeah, that's real.
Not,
I try to find the examples of the worst, like zoning.
You
and
can
and
have
code.
This one.
That is actually
Matt
the worst
Farah
one,
had to
I
build
think.
A parking
yes.
lot for his parking
yes.
lot. This is one of the dumbest things you could ever fucking imagine. And that basement was 50% of the cost of this entire project.
Yeah, because it's
to dig that
as excavate. Yeah.
And had to
yeah.
hold all this weight.
Yeah.
And so I understand if you want to build a giant office building that 1,000 people are going to come to every day, and you need to have some parking for that. I all right, I get that. But to have to build a parking lot for your parking lot seems an awful, awfully wasteful.
Well, and also, I mean, and that drives up the cost of housing, too. And we're getting better at that in L.A. They're changing some of the requirements where if you are building new housing close to transit, certain types of transit stops, you don't have to put in the 2.25 parking spaces or whatever it is per unit. You can actually put in less. And in some instances, you can put in none. So that's just another good example. Like, there's a brand new county-owned building that went up in my neighborhood that's like right by the train station, right by the Red Line, which is a major, or whatever you call it now, B. They renamed all the transit lines here, so now they have letters and I don't know what they stand for. But it's like a major transit line, major transit stop, and they built, you know, thousands and thousands of parking spaces into this county-owned building.
I hope they use them. I guess.
Or maybe you can convert them later into housing.
Maybe you can put tents there.
Yeah, maybe later you can just, like, you know, frame them out and the floor is flat and you just say now it can just be where you can hang out.
Yeah. What do we do? Like, I worry, like, that in some cases, like, it's obviously never too late, right? It's never too late to push things in the right direction. But, you know, in our city here, it's like it's so sprawled and it would be so difficult to really make subway stops that would be good for everybody. You know, it's because it's not like in New York, you go in and then you go out.
Yeah.
And so you can make this sort of spider design that kind of works. But in L.A., it's not central like that. We have a downtown, but most people aren't going to downtown for their job.
Yes,
there's a lot of downtowns.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
That's the big thing.
So there's bike lanes. All right, that's cool. There's dedicated bus lanes. That seems like a good plan too. What else can we be doing?
Those two things would make a big difference if we immediately protected all the bike lanes. I mean, we have a mayoral race this year. I have not much hope that any of these people this is their top priority or that they really care that much about these things. But
where's our old mayor going?
India.
India.
Yeah.
Oh, that seems fun.
Well, maybe not. So immediately protecting all the bike lanes would make a huge difference. Bus lanes immediately also, it's just pay.
That would make
like,
a big difference.
It would make a big difference because, and what you would do is you would have buses become much more reliable. They would start to fill in that network that you're talking about, that we, like our rail system, yes, we're building it as fast as we can, and we're two major lines are going to open this year. Like, one really exciting thing that's going to happen this year in LA is the regional connector is going to open. They say, fingers crossed, I hope I didn't just jinx it. But what that would allow you to do is basically switch from the X axes to the Y axes when you're taking transit kind of anywhere in downtown.
Uh-huh.
So you have a one seat ride that gets you from like Long Beach to Pasadena, right?
Okay.
So you're thinking about the way that you can, like, you won't have to switch trains. There'll be more of them. It'll just be more highly efficient. And just that one thing is going to make a big difference. Like, yeah. So it's more of like a making what we already have more efficient. And those changes could happen right away. And then building the housing closer to the transit. And you look around here and there's some good examples of that. There's also some not so good examples of that. But we just need to locate more people closer to where they need to go.
Why do you think high-speed rail has not gone anywhere in California? I mean, it seems to just an idiot like me.
Yeah.
Like L.A., San Diego, San Francisco, Vegas, right, with a few stops in between, yeah. is pretty basic stuff.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it's going through pretty empty land.
Yes.
And we already have some of it. We've got the Surfliner. You know, we've got some of that stuff already, some of the infrastructure.
So what will happen, it's important to note that High Speed is being built in the middle of the state right now. They're constructing it right now. You can go there and see it. It looks really cool.
Are they?
Yeah. So there's a whole section of it that's on target and moving forward and that where they have all the land that they've acquired and it's
And this is going to be L.A. to San Francisco.
Well, they're building it out from the middle out, right? So they're starting with the middle and then what will happen? I think what's more likely to happen with the other parts, and this is actually kind of interesting, is like. Will speed up and improve the corridors that you're talking about. So like LA to San Diego is actually a great train ride.
No, it
like,
is a really nice one.
It's a
one.
Really easy way to get there. And it's sometimes can be very comparable to driving as far as timing. You know, it doesn't take that long. And it would just take a little bit more improvements to like get like you're talking about the Surfliner kind of corridor faster. So we're not sharing space with freight rail, which is what happens in a lot of these and slows them down. And then the Vegas situation, they're talking now about that. It'll come in chunks, right? So they're doing like one section, that'll get from Vegas like almost here. And then there'll be another portion that'll be
part of Vegas to Riverside.
It'll be like Rancho Cucamonga or something. I don't know. It's like crazy. But it's like it goes like somewhere that you didn't really want to go that much. But like some people do need to go there. So it's great. But so I think it'll come in chunks. And then you're right, like the parts of it that are really hard are like getting through some of the mountain ranges just north of here. The alignment up in the Bay Area is kind of a nightmare with people fighting about where it should go. But it'll happen. It is happening. I think the important thing to say it is happening. But we cannot discount the damage that was done by people like Elon Musk, the Virgin Hyperloop company that just decided that they're not going to focus on passengers anymore and just go to cargo because like they were spending all this money to go to those meetings with the city leaders and the state leaders and say, you're wasting your time. I went to an event, speaking of our mayor, with Elon Musk and Eric Garcetti in like 2019 and in downtown LA with the mayors and transportation officials from like every major city in the United States. And Elon Musk gets up there and says, nobody should be building high-speed rail. Like tunnels are the future. Hyperloop is the future. My tubes of whatever are the future. And they all like, they ate it up. They were like, oh, innovative. So you cannot discount how much this has done to true damage to like the just like the vibe of high speed rail, which works great and we can build it and we definitely will.
It drives me so insane that it's just accepted as truth that rather than working with technology that exists now and we know works. We have to invent something new to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And investors need to profit handsomely off it because they were on the ground
floor.
It drives me nuts that people talk about autonomous cars and some projected safety compared to the average driver. And it's like, bitch, how about the best driver? Compare to a perfect fucking driver.
No.
And I'm not talking about Mario Andretti. I'm talking about compared to someone who has driven a car for 50 years and never gotten a ticket and never had an insurance claim. No. I want it to be better than that driver, not the average fucking driver.
But that's also how we set speed limits. You know about that, right?
Yes.
So there's like this 85th percentile rule, which we are changing. Like it's pretty great what's going to happen at the state level. But we
wait, what's happening with speed
they're,
limits?
They're going to change. We're lowering some speed limits here in the city. Basically, they're going to allow cities to
set
their own speed limit,
oh, really?
Which is such a novel idea. But that's how we set speed limits. We let everybody drive, and we say, oh, well, 85% of the people drove this fast. Sure, that sounds good.
Look, I think you should be allowed to get a special license to go 100 miles an hour.
Oh, I mean, do we even need to do that? Maybe.
That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
Maybe on a track.
But I think if you pass tests and you get your car inspected more regularly for safety, you should get a special license plate that says you can go faster.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think you'll agree with that.
My good friend Alex Roy, who people are surprised that we are very good friends, you know, he is always talking about the licensing.
Tiered licensing,
like
making
it. Yes. And like, I completely agree. I mean, it's my daughter says she doesn't want to get a driver's license, and I want her to like hold on to that, you know, that feeling where she was just like, you know, I don't need to do that. I don't want to do that. I like riding my bike. I like riding the bus. And like,
well, that's good.
That's great. Like, I would want that for my children, and I wish I could unlearn how to drive, to be honest.
Well, what do they say? The mark of a civilized society is not where the poor get cars, it's where the rich take public transit by choice.
That's right. That's a very famous saying, yeah.
Is it? I don't think I got the exact wording
right. You got it pretty right.
But
it's been attributed to the mayor of Bogota, Enrique Penalosa, who was very famous for implementing the very vast bus rapid transit system that kind of really changed the city. But that is what we want, but just more than that, just making it fair and just and easy and cheap for people to get around. It shouldn't be this huge burden. It's 30% of people's incomes, and it creates 30% of carbon emissions. So for in this country, that those seem like they could be related somehow.
probably, yeah. And I mean, you know, it seems like trying to solve the problem of road deaths, which are tragic, with a new technology that doesn't exist that removes the driver from the equation entirely, that to me does not seem like an equitable solution.
Right.
It seems like there are existing systems that are proven to work in other places, many of which we've talked about over the last hour, and some of which we haven't, like improved licensing standards, like improved inspection standards, like they have in Germany, making sure your tires are safe, your vehicle is safe. And I realize that for people who don't have a lot of money, it can be more expensive. So I realize that that's not entirely equitable. If you have to increase the standards, it means you can't drive as crappy of a vehicle around the street.
Variable speed limits. Clunker. Yes.
Like in Germany. Right. I mean, in Germany, there are no speed limit signs. The speed limit is beamed into your car, and it changes with the conditions and the traffic and the weather and all this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These aren't difficult decisions. Many other countries have made them, and they would be extremely popular once again. I mean, to something like cash for clunkers, like, you know, we've done a pretty good job with that here. But like going back to the e-bike thing, like, if people could trade in their car for an e-bike and knew they had a safe place to ride it by this summer, a lot of people would make that decision. They really would. And think of people who like rely on.
How about guns for e-bikes? That could work, right? trade me that M16 for an e-bike. You might get a few.
But then
you might get a couple.
Oh, wait.
Does it come with a gun rack?
Yeah.
It's a surf rack that you can hold a gun with. Yeah.
It's a surf
Those
rack.
Those are the same shape.
It's a surf rack, but you can buy the adapter kit at the gun show.
Yeah.
But like these are very, I mean, like you said, other countries are doing these things.
Isn't it weird that people talk about things as if they are totally impossible where other countries have made them work without much trouble at all?
Isn't that weird? Not really at all. You look at somewhere like, you look at just what's been announced, I think in just this week in like Paris, where they have the car-free zone, right? She just drew a circle, mayor, and she's just like, we're doing it and it'll be done. And she's done it for, you know, other Anne Hidalgo, this mayor who's been in office the same time, I like to remind people, as our mayor in Los Angeles. And she has completely transformed their streets and done it in a way that, again, prioritizes how people who do not have access to vehicles can get around first. You know, that I think that's the most important thing, like school closing streets that schools are on. That's an easy, very popular policy proposal, right? Like just saying, like, we're going to help kids get to school, they can walk to school, like that'd be great, you know.
It's a lot of this stuff seems very logical to me. It really does. And I like cars and I like driving. I don't like driving in the city. Driving in the city sucks.
Nobody does.
No. And no. I understand how people end up fucking scrolling their iPhones instead of paying attention when you're just going 100 yards and then stopping at a light and going 100 yards. I understand how people get distracted. I really do. I'm sympathetic to that because that kind of driving sucks. That's not the driving that I was doing this morning up in the mountains with friends in appropriately prepared vehicles, you know, 50 miles outside of town. That's yes. That's the kind of driving that's I like. Okay. I different. Like to do that yeah. kind of driving.
It's like you keep your horses out of the
same,
town.
Yeah, same shit.
Just keep them in a little
I
stable.
Drove past some horses
yeah.
today.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think We're obviously, as a country, we're not getting rid of cars. It's not going to happen. So that I think that's, you know, but there are a few places we could make it that really encourage other ways to get around that have worked well in other places.
And would be, people would be excited. You look at something like Ciclovia that happens here in L.A., it is the largest, and for people who aren't from here, it's where we close a bunch of streets, like a few miles of streets. We used to do it.
Twice a year? Or three times a year?
I think we got up to like four times a year maybe, and then there was a pandemic, and hopefully it's coming back. But other like Santa Monica does its own, all these different, because we have all these different cities. But it is instantly, from the first one, it was the largest open streets event in the entire country because we have so many people, such a big city, such a vast street network. Mm. And it just draws people out. You know, hundreds of thousands of people are coming out for these events. So if you want to see if there's like a popular support for this or people don't ride bikes or whatever, like you can see how people use the streets in a different way if you give them an opportunity to.
Yeah. It's hard. Like it's riding a bicycle on a street with cars is sketchy.
It's very scary.
It's super sketchy.
Yes.
And I'm so lucky that to get from Venice to here, I can do it entirely on bike path. And I'm talking about bike path that's not on a road.
Yeah.
The main yes. the beach one and then the Bellona Creek
right.
Trail.
You're very lucky.
It's super lucky. Mm-hmm. I only have to do about a half a mile of actual on the road yep. riding to get here.
You're
so
very lucky.
It's very safe. It's very relaxing. And it's on a nice day. There's nothing better.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see more of that because there's a lot of places that I would bike. I'm like, fuck, that's shady as hell. I'm not doing that. You know, the e-bike does help though a lot.
Yes,
I really. If people haven't tried an e-bike, I strongly recommend.
We have them in our bike share. It's really exciting. You can ride. They're going to start swapping more of them out. So
cool.
I ride up big ass hills in that electric bike share e-bike, and it makes my day a lot better.
Riley Brennan, when he was here last week, said because we were talking about bird scooters, and he said the average user. Rides a bird scooter 17 times before purchasing their own.
Oh, interesting! Yeah,
e-bike.
Yeah,
that's so.
Yeah.
That's that. That might end up killing or strongly hobbling the
your
rental
shared economy.
You know that wouldn't be the worst thing. The fucking bird scooters are annoying. when you have dockless. They just become trash.
Yes.
When you can leave them anywhere, people will leave them fucking anywhere. Especially in Venice.
Yeah, and we're contesting this road space, right? Like, we're throwing them on the sidewalks, which is very difficult for someone in a wheelchair to get past, right? Like, we should take more space away from the parking of the cars
yeah.
and then say, "Here, look, here's an option. Here's a great place to park it. Here's a place to fix your bike. Here's a place to, if you...
Yeah, they should have like tool benches
yes.
like they do for snowboards on the mountains.
You work on your bike, like if you're someone who uses a bike to make deliveries or something like that, like here's a credit for you to, your place for you to charge your bike for free. Or, you know, we could mm-hmm. do so much more to take care of people that don't have the options. That would also make it better for people who would like to make this an option for their life.
Well, I think when they converted all the, not all, but when they converted a lot of parking spaces to outdoor dining, it really showed that it didn't really ruin, it didn't affect the parking. It was fine. It was totally fine.
Yeah.
I hope they keep all that. I hope they make it permanent. Because, like, I have a, like, surface-level parking on the street. It's like, we have too much of it, frankly. It's too free.
Well, that is
too
true.
Much
that is definitely
give some of
true.
It to outdoor dining. Yes. I like that. I hope
or street that. Vendors.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. Hot, more taco trucks.
Yes, more outside food. We
remember
really
that,
aren't that very good.
Who's that asshole politician who talked about taco trucks?
Taco trucks
like,
on every corner.
Like they were bad.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Be fucking awesome.
Yeah. That's what we're
Korean
really,
taco trucks,
we're
please.
Really missing
while we're
that.
At it.
We're missing that part of it in LA. We could have so much more of just this outdoor living.
Bro, there's great meals to be had on the street here.
Yep.
These fools set up outside Mitsuha, the Korean market, like fucking banging tacos. Love that shit. We have a few questions from our Patreon. If you want to ask questions to our guests for the live shows, it's, of course, patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. Sean Gallagher said, Alyssa, we've touched on this a bit. What's your take on parts of cities with 100% public transportation and no cars? What is the rationale behind that, and do you see that taking over and expanding larger areas of cities? We just talked about Paris. Other thoughts? Anything else to add to that?
I mean, the New York example is a good one because, and
the Times Square,
yeah, because I think what they did there, it proved people's biggest concerns wrong, which was like the businesses did okay. Traffic didn't really get worse. And they did do things like improve like the bike lanes through that area. You know, you're able to get through there now without feeling, well, you might hit some tourists, but you don't feel like you're going to get hit by a car.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to think about these as networks. So you can't just like close one street and be like, we did it. You know, they've been talking about closing Broadway in downtown LA here for a long time, which would eventually, like maybe in like 45 years, have a streetcar going down it or something like that.
Like it did in like the 30s?
Yeah.
Like it probably
the streetcar situation is put some buses on there. But you can't just like close one street. I think that's the thing we need to think about. It's like greenways. It's like, it's not just like, you know, you just close it and be like, it's done and throw some cafe chairs out and you'd be like, great, we did it. But you're actually trying to help people get from one place to another mm-hmm. in a way that's safer and more pleasant. And the tree situation we didn't even talk about here, right? Like our tree canopy is so bad in Los Angeles. And that makes people not want to walk or, you know, for people who have to walk, it makes it a very unpleasant situation as well. So like, the thing I would say is just like, let's just do like things like create tree corridors or, you know, like actually try to make the ground visible once again in some of these places in a way that would achieve a lot of these climate and pollution and, air quality issues that we have.
Yeah. Daniel Berman says in many ultra dense cities such as New York, if many ultra dense cities such as New York eventually move to battery electric vehicles, what challenges do you foresee with urban charging? Or will those same cities just go full pedestrian?
The charging thing is so complicated. And I think the big thing that not enough people are talking about is that we just shouldn't and can't have everybody switch to electric cars. We have to have some goal where we're just saying we have to have less cars, period. Because think about it. Think about the charging infrastructure if you're someone who is a renter, for example. Like they put these like charging stations like on these poles in parts of City of LA. Have you seen them? They're just in the middle of nowhere. So like, okay, like one person gets to charge.
Public charging sucks. It just does.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Does,
So like maybe you could do it at your work or maybe your apartment building might invest, you know, but all I can think of is like if we're going to have these benefits of electric vehicles for everyone, like you have to start with thinking of like who relies on their car the most and they probably are not going to be someone who lives in a single family home that has a garage and has access to charging. So like I think like there's a big Some of the best thinking around this is like, again, going back maybe to like the sharing economy of how we move to like a shared electric model for more short trips and getting around, whether it's a car or a bike or, you know, something like that. That doesn't require massive charging infrastructure, because if you already see it now, like it's taking the place of where we should have had bike infrastructure right. or bus infrastructure. We have this great electric car sharing program in the city of LA, which people use, and it's targeted towards low-income communities, and it's heavily subsidized to make sure that people can afford to use it. And that's probably the best model. Like, you're just not going to own it. You might just borrow it.
I also think that if we, rather than force people into
nobody's being forced
rather than strongly encouraging all consumers to shift to electric cars, what if it was vehicles that spend lots of time idling in front of businesses, like commercial delivery
right?
vehicles,
yeah,
the Amazon trucks,
yes,
which are already working
yep.
on that,
yep,
UPS, FedEx, and the post office. You know, the beer delivery trucks,
yeah.
the trucks that,
yes.
the vehicles that do the same predictable routes over and over, that go back to some type of depot that might have the infrastructure.
Are you talking about maybe United States Postal Service trucks?
Maybe USPS trucks that look like ducks. Maybe those. You know,
Well, they just bought a contract. They just finalized a contract to make those. I mean, that's a perfect example of like a low-hanging fruit. It's very simple. Making all of Amazon, just if you want to operate in the city, it has to be electric. Those are easy things
yeah.
to do.
Like I've lived in New York City. I grew up in New York. And a lot of folks who own cars in New York City use them to get out of New York
mm-hmm.
City. And I understand that. And so I'm not really concerned about a gas car, that comes into the city and goes in a garage and sits there, and then a week later it leaves. Like, I'm not that concerned about that. The ones that drive circles mm-hmm. around the city
yep.
all fucking day,
yeah.
those could be electric,
yep.
and it wouldn't have to impact most regular private car owners
yeah.
negatively.
Yeah. You do yeah. that with also the big talk is like, you know, cities buying fleets,
right?
So like, and that's, we've done a good job with that here in LA too, where we've made deals with automakers, and I think we have like street sweepers, mm-hmm. you know, all these really exciting municipal vehicles that will now be electric. So, I mean, that's really the thing, is like, how much can you just make public infrastructure, you know, physical mm-hmm. and also just like the vehicles themselves, how much can you just make public, and then you give people enough choices and then they can get around any way they want.
Yeah. Last one, Dante Casale says, Alyssa, Strong Towns and Urban 3 advocate that Detroit's bankruptcy could happen elsewhere, as suburbs are financially unsustainable, as the cost of car-centric infrastructure per person is too high. Do you agree?
Hmm.
What are Strong Towns and Urban 3?
They're like urban think tanks, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But I'm curious about, so the bankruptcy of Detroit.
Well, Detroit's bankruptcy had to do with massive flight.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean. And it's quite reversed, you know, now to the point where there's a lot of issues about, you know, displacement and gentrification happening in a way that is probably adversely affecting the communities that have been there for a long time. But I think the question is about like, suburbs. Okay, so suburbs
are financially unsustainable because the cost of car-centric infrastructure per person, so roads,
right.
parking garages, etc., per person in the suburbs costs too
well,
much.
Well, parking is a good example. And again, the changes we're making in LA are good. Not that we're suburban, but the cost of adding those extra parking spaces, whatever you decide to do, if it's a garage or if it's like in your, you know, subterranean parking situation, that drives up the cost of housing, right? So just if you want to talk about like from a perspective of like how much more housing we need, remember I said 200,000 units, right? And a vast majority of those need to be affordable to the people who make, you know, below the poverty line, basically. I mean, what we're talking about here is like making sure that we can build enough housing so we can get everybody off the streets and also put them close to where they work or want to go to school, mm-hmm. or, you know, we need to put it in the right place. So really just like the parking costs alone, like that's an easy thing to just yank out of the housing equation, right? And just say like, we can build housing for cheaper. We don't have to worry about all the other like you were talking about, like the parking, other park, then you take out another parking space somewhere else because you've right. taken that out of the equation, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's, it's, I would just basically make it all come down to parking. And if you put the housing in the right place and not in the suburbs, you know, not this these exurban subdivisions that we continue to build. If you go to like the fringes of Los Angeles and yeah. there's a development being proposed for like, you know, 70 miles north of downtown. And they're like, oh, everyone will drive electric cars. And you're like, but why? Yeah. Why would we do this?
When we go up to like Santa Clarita at the base of those hills and they've built like a Playa Vista
in Santa Clarita.
I'm like, am I in the fucking zombie land? Yeah. What is this?
Yeah. And then you think about it's not just that. I mean, that's how we got highways in the first place, right? Yeah, it was people wanted to live further away. And then we decided we could tear down people's houses closer to the city.
To build the highway
so those people could go. So yeah, like undoing that, great. But it's like, how do we most of all focus on bringing the cost of housing down for people who just need to get to their jobs? Like they just need to go to work. They just need to provide for their families and like in a way that is not going to eventually get them out onto the streets. Like this is what we are faced with now in the city. And a lot of it can be solved through housing policy, but a lot of it does come down to transportation.
Yeah. It affects everything.
It does.
It really affects everything. So everyone should read Alyssa's writing. It's on Curbed, which is part of New York Magazine. It's very good. Follow her on Twitter, A Walker in LA. Your tweets are excellent.
Thank you.
I'm not mad that you're happy my Porsche's on the
bottom. I'm not really happy.
I know you're not. You just wrote a Gawker article for
I did.
Part of my job,
I used to work at Gawker. It's in my blood.
I know. You can never leave the Gawker.
Yeah, every once in a while it creeps back in. It's my job to write some dumb blogs, but also maybe
I understand,
some helpful
but
ones.
I think. You'll be happy to know they're building my car.
Oh, well, and I hope it makes it
they're
here.
They're building all the cars.
I hope
cars
nothing
again.
Happens to it.
Yeah, well, the Stranger Danger Ace, the next boat.
Yeah, which ace is coming?
Fuck.
Ace Ventura.
Ace
I hope it's not
ace,
that one.
The ace
of Spades.
The Ace of Spades will carry my next Porsche. What'll really be interesting to see is if, like, the VIN numbers, because they're towing this boat somewhere, and it'll get like scrapped out, like it'll really be interesting to see what gets like salvaged. Like there's gonna be like cars in fucking Venezuela that are half melted.
Interesting.
Your car might end up.
My car will definitely.
Is that a frosted cherry with a hint of sea kelp?
Right.
Yeah.
And what's really, you know, what's also kind of concerning
is that what it's called?
Frosted
berry.
Frozen berry,
A frozen
berry. That was close, though.
See, I'm so sorry. I don't know anything about cars.
That's all right. The shitty irony of the boat situation. I don't care about my fucking stupid car.
Well, your attitude was so great about it.
I will get another one. I think it was a good opportunity to make jokes.
Yeah.
And most reporters are so lazy that they all contacted me because I was the only blue check mark to tweet about it. And I wrote a 4-sentence thing and control C, control V, control to all of them. And they all printed the same dull ass statement that I wrote. It was very funny. They couldn't find, there's 5,000 cars in the boat. Yeah. You couldn't find one
Nobody wants to admit it, talk about it.
Yeah, but the irony is it really looks like the fire was started by an electric car.
I know.
Which is really
the serious story to be written here is like what I started to think about was like what happens at the point where Germany stops making, you know, internal combustion vehicles for their residents,
right,
but they still make them for us and ship them over, right? So like what nonsensical world are we in where like we're importing cars at all? I mean, I know you're a special exception, but like
what are we thinking?
Like, are we really going to like do this for like 10 more years? Like, it just seems ridiculous.
I mean, I totally understand. And for high volume sales, you know, even of German car, you know, BMW builds the X3 and the X5 in South Carolina. Mercedes has a plant here. So, you know, most of the manufacturers do build some of their cars without having to ship them. In the case of Porsche, the sports cars are built in Germany, as are the I think all Porsches are built in Germany. I don't think
I think the electric.
All
the,
Porsches. Yeah, Taycans are built in Germany as well.
What's a Taycan?
What is a Taycan?
Yeah. Like, what's a name? It's not a mountain range.
It was a word that wasn't trademarked somewhere.
Like Farfignugen. Yeah. I mean, that was really striking to me. That was just that, yeah, at some point they have decided they will not manufacture them. You can't buy a new one there, but what's that date for us?
Yeah. Like, yeah. That'll be an interesting study when that happens. Yeah.
Yep.
And I, you know, they always, it's when you announce that you're banning the manufacture or sale of gasoline cars, you get front page news.
Yeah.
When you walk it back.
Yeah.
When it becomes untenable,
yes.
It's always on like B17.
Gavin Newsom won't be in office then, yeah, so it doesn't matter.
We'll see
to
if
him.
It actually happens. Yeah, yeah. You get the headlines for making the announcement, and then you walk it back later,
yep.
Like the CAFE standards and all that stuff too. But I'm pro electric cars. But if you've got a massive environmental disaster that was started by an electric car catching on fire. There are some questions to be asked
just,
about that.
We need
that.
Fewer. We don't want the battery extraction process. Like, let's just make fewer of them. Like, it's really easy. Like, it's not. It's just not going to be a one-for-one trade-off. Like, let's just decide that we're going to scale down that process, too, and see if we make better batteries, of course, but, like, it's not going to be a one-for-one trade-off for trade-in for your
Well,
your
it's
vehicle.
Like it's like with a cat. You don't. I have cats, and you don't want to ever take something away from the cat without being able to redirect it, right? So if you're going to, you can't just tell Americans, no, you can't have cars.
Right.
You know, we really would have to show them why the other options are better and make that investment first to make it desirable to not have a car.
Yes.
You know, we don't want our shit taken away. We are not good people like that.
I completely agree. I don't want to take anybody's things away. I just want to show you a better way to get there, maybe.
Yeah, I don't want to sit in fucking traffic. I really don't. Traffic sucks. I'd rather not. You know, when I was living in New York City, I took the subway everywhere. There's nothing wrong with it. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, Alyssa. I really appreciate your writing. I think you shine a light on a lot of very important issues in my city and around the world, and keep doing it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, too.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. That's our show. Thank you to our patrons for asking questions, patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast, and we will be back next week. Bye.